Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Ganesh. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet. Today is August 6, 2015, and there are devotees from New Delhi, Delhi NCR region, Delhi National Capital Region, in big groups who offered at this Sannidhi beautiful devotional offering of soulful songs. They are on a pilgrimage to Prashantinilam, even as the Delhi Seva is going on. And even as I was hearing their program, I could not but think about Bhagwan's visit to this capital city of India many times in the past, and also just the year before he left his physical form in 2010. And we have seen Delhi come to Puttaparthi on so many occasions. We have seen prime ministers and presidents come any number of times to seek his blessings. And among all these distinguished people, eminent heads of state, one of them just does not leave your mind and memory the last few days. Because he is someone the entire country came forward to express their love. Someone whom the entire nation loved, cutting across barriers of religion, race, caste and color, and who very sadly left our midst quite suddenly. I was in Chennai 2 days ago, and it was so heartening to see huge pictures and banners of late loved President APJ Abdul Kalam in every street and road, every corner, in every little pathway. You could see huge pictures of Kalam sir. And it made me feel how true is the name that is attributed to him as the people's president. The current Prime Minister of India, Sri Narendra Modi ji, in the editorial page of India's leading newspaper, so appropriately wrote, "Bharat has lost a Ratna, but the light from this jewel will guide us towards APJ Abdul Kalam's dream destination." And what is that dream destination? India as a knowledge superpower in the first rank of nations. Our scientist president, and one who was genuinely loved and admired across masses, never measured success by material positions. This is what the opening paragraph of Narendra Modi ji's article says, and that's so true. In material terms, the people's president, it now transpires, own precious little, except his 2,500 books. There was only a wristwatch, 6 shirts, 4 trousers, 3 suits and a pair of shoes. Kalam did not own any property or a fridge or a television or a car or an air conditioner. This for a man who spent over 5 decades in public service, including his stint as the President of the Republic. His former media advisor, Mr. S.M. Khan, says, "Kalam sir would never accept a gift except a book. And whenever somebody brought him a packaged gift and tried to pass it off as a book, he insisted on examining what was inside. Anything other than a book was politely returned." Mr. Modi, further in that article, writes, "He took little from the world, gave all he could to society. A man of deep faith, he epitomized the 3 great virtues of our civilization, which are Dhamma, which is self-restraint, Dana, which is sacrifice, and Daya, compassion." Dhamma, Dana and Daya, self-restraint, sacrifice and compassion. Such a fantastic son, incredible son of Mother Earth. And his last moments too were befittingly so sublime. Mr. Srijan Pal Singh, the co-author of Kalam sir's last books, has movingly documented this, where he says, I quote, "It has been 8 hours since we last talked Sleep eludes me and memories keep flushing down, sometimes as tears. Our day, 27 July 2015, began at 12 noon when we took our seats in the flight to Guwahati. Dr. Kalam was in the seat 1A and I was in 1C. He was wearing a dark colored Kalam suit and I started off complimenting nice color. Little did I know that this was going to be the last color I will see him on. Long 2.5 hours of flying in the monsoon weather, and that was followed by another 2.5 hours of car drive to Indian Institute of Management, Shillong. For these two-legged trip of 5 hours, we talked, discussed and debated. These were among hundreds of the long flights and longer drives we have been together over the last 6 years. As each of them, this was special too. Three incidents or discussions in particular will be lasting memories of our last trip. And he goes on, Mr. Shijanpal Singh, narrating these three incidents. I quote again. First, Dr. Kalam was absolutely worried about the attacks in Punjab. The loss of innocent lives left him filled with sorrow. The topic of lecture at IIM Shillong was creating a livable planet Earth. He related the incident to the topic and said, "It seems the man-made forces are as big a threat to the livability of Earth as pollution." Our second discussion was more national. For the past 2 days, Dr. Kalam was worried that time and again, Parliament, the supreme institution of democracy, was dysfunctional. He said, "I have seen two different governments in my tenure, and I have seen more after that. This disruption just keeps happening. It's not right. I really need to find out a way to ensure that the Parliament works on developmental policies." He then asked me to prepare a surprise assignment question for the students at IIM Shillong, which he would give them only at the end of the lecture. He wanted them to suggest three innovative ways to make the Parliament more productive and vibrant. And then after a while, Dr. Kalam said, "But how can we ask them to give solutions if we ourselves do not have? If I don't have them myself?" And so for the next 1 hour, they discussed option after option over what could be a solution. And he wanted that this discussion be included in their upcoming book, Advantage India. So this was the second discussion, the incident that Mr. Shijanpal Singh wanted to share. And the third was an experience which demonstrated the beauty of Dr. Kalam's humility. Mr. Shijanpal Singh writes, "We were in a convoy of 6 to 7 cars. Dr. Kalam and I were in the second car. Ahead was an open gypsy with 3 soldiers in it. Two of them were sitting on either side and one lean guy was standing atop holding his gun. 1 hour into the road journey, Dr. Kalam said, 'Why is he standing? He will get tired. This is like punishment. Can you ask a wireless message to be given so that he may sit?' I had to convince him. He has been probably instructed to keep standing for better security. But Dr. Kalam did not relent. And so we tried radio messaging, but that did not work. For the next 1.5 hours of the journey, Dr. Kalam reminded me thrice to see if I can hand signal the soldier to sit down. Finally, realizing there is little that we can do, Dr. Kalam told me, 'I want to meet him and thank him.' Later, when we landed in IIM Shillong, I went inquiring through security people and got hold of this standing guy. I took him inside and Dr. Kalam greeted him warmly. He shook his hand, said, 'Thank you, buddy.' And then he asked, 'Are you tired? Would you like something to eat? I'm sorry you had to stand so long because of me.' And the young lean guard draped in black cloth was surprised, absolutely stunned at the treatment he received from Kalam sir. In fact, he was speechless. He lost words and he just said, 'Sir, if it is for you, I don't mind standing even for 6 hours. After this, Dr. Shijanpal Singh writes, "We went to the lecture hall He did not want to be late for the lecture. Students should never be made to wait. This is what Dr. Kalam always said. So I quickly set up his mic, briefed on final lecture and took position on the computers. 2 minutes into the speech, sitting behind him, I heard a long pause after he completed one sentence. And then, the next minute, he collapsed. I looked at him, immediately went to hold him. We picked him up. As the doctor rushed, we tried whatever we could. I will never forget the look in his 3/4 closed eyes. And I held his head with one hand and tried reviving with whatever I could. His hands clenched, curled onto my finger. There was stillness on his face, and those wise eyes were motionlessly radiating wisdom. Dr. Kalam never said a word. He did not show pain. Only purpose was visible. In 5 minutes, we were in the nearest hospital. In another few minutes, they indicated that the missile man had actually flown away forever. I touched his feet one last time. As I turned back, a closet of thoughts opened. Often, Kalam sir would ask me, "You are young. Decide what will you like to be remembered for?" I kept thinking of new impressive answers till one day I gave up and I resorted to tit for tat. I asked him back, "Sir, first you tell me, what will you like to be remembered for? President? Scientist? Writer? Missile man? India 2020? Target 3 billion? What?" I thought I had made the question easier by giving him options. But Dr. Kalam sprang on me a surprise and he said, "Teacher." He wanted to be remembered as a teacher. And then something he said 2 weeks ago when we were discussing about his missile time friends. He said, "Children need to take care of their parents. It is sad that sometimes this is not happening." And then he paused and said 2 things. "Elders must also do. Never leave wealth at your deathbed. That leaves a fighting family. Second, one is blessed if one can die working, standing tall without any long-drawn ailing. Goodbyes should be short, really short." And Mr. Sujan Pal Singh concludes that write-up saying, "Today, as I look back, he took the final journey, teaching what he always wanted to be remembered doing. Until his final moment, he was standing, working and lecturing. He left us as a great teacher standing tall. He leaves the world with nothing accumulated in his account but loads of wishes and tons of love of people. He was successful even in his end. We'll miss all the lunches and dinners we have together. We'll miss all the times he surprised me with his humility and startled me with his curiosity. We'll miss the lessons of life he taught in action and words, the struggles we made to our flights, our trips, our long debates." He says, "Dr. Kalam, you gave me dreams. You showed me dreams need to be impossible, for anything else is a compromise to my own ability." The man is gone, but the mission lives on. Long live Kalam. So this is how Mr. Sujan Pal Singh ends the beautiful account that he was had a chance to witness from very close quarters. Such was the life. They say, from the way a person leaves this earth, you know what sort of fragrance he shared, he spread during his lifetime. And what is most cherishable is that Dr. Kalam was not only loved by the people of this nation, he was also loved by the embodiment of love himself. Bhagwan showered so much attention and grace on Kalam sir whenever he visited Prashantinilayam. He was in fact the chief guest of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning's convocation on two occasions, in 2002 and 2006. On both these occasions, he visited Prashantinilayam as the president of the country. If you have heard the talk by Professor G. Venkatraman, which was played in the morning, you would have listened to some amazing anecdotes related to his association with Bhagwan and his visits to Prashantinilayam. There is so much more to this stellar personality, his trips to Puttaparthi, as well as his exalted virtues that he epitomized. And I thought we should not miss this opportunity to reflect on all of these and derive inspiration from this colossus of a personality. And we will do this discussion today with two former students of Baba's University who had the chance to actually interact with Kalam sir when he was in Prashantinilayam. Mr. Jai Ganesh and Dr. Deepakanand. Jai Ganesh works in the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust in the Medicare division, and Dr. Deepakanand is a faculty member in the Department of Management and Commerce in Bhagwan's University, and both of them had the opportunity to witness Kalam when he was in the university and as Bhagwan's guest, and also interact with him. So that is what we will be doing tonight. We will talk to what they have seen of Kalam and the lessons that they imbibed from his personality, and then we'll move on to some of the powerful lessons that Dr. Kalam has left for all of us to reflect on and imbibe in our lives. So that is what is in store in this last leg of Thursday Live, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai. Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Timuray Sai's Bishu, and as I just mentioned, today we discuss the salient life of late President APJ Abdul Kalam and the powerful lessons his life has for all of us. And as I just mentioned, I have with me now in the studios Brother Jai Ganesh and Brother Deepakanand. Welcome, brothers, to Outside Inside, Deep Inside.
Sai Ram, Brother Bishu.
Thank you, Bishu.
So Jai Ganesh, if you can go down the memory lane and pick up for us those moments when you had the chance to see Dr. Kalam. I believe he was here in Prashantinilayam in the year 1999.
Yes,
and
yes.
You were a student then.
Yes. My link or introduction to Dr. Kalam actually goes down to my childhood, where I was very interested in defense related news and aeronautics. So I used to read a lot about the missile development program, which Dr. Kalam spearheaded. And then it was very good, and it was a very delightful experience that I could meet him when he had come down to Prashantinilayam in the year 1999. Actually, Dr. Kalam had come after the nuclear test in Pokhran. And so he addressed the students in the college auditorium, and especially since after the nuclear test, there were a lot of questions related to that. He very nicely answered all of our doubts and cleared them. And he had also come to our lab. That time I was doing my MSc Physics, and I was in my first year of MSc. And he had come to our lab and spent quite a bit of time with us. And the best thing that I liked him was like, you know, the childlike curiosity and the simplicity. He mingled with us very freely, you know, to get to meet a top scientist like him. It was absolutely unassuming and very, 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 very simple. And he went around, you know, asking, how are you, buddy? I still sweetly remember his sweet childlike voice. Like, you know, he went around, reached out to each one of us and asked our names, what we are doing and, you know, what you would like to do in future. And then he visited the three labs within the department. That is a nuclear physics lab, the electronics lab and the optics lab. So some of my classmates had set up some experimental arrangements which were explained to him. And a couple of our teachers also got the opportunity to showcase the research work they are involved. And he was very, very happy and very appreciative of our work. And I was, I'm glad that I was a photographer then. And then I could capture those beautiful moments for us to relish now. And he even posed for a group photograph before he left. And it was very, 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 very informal. He ensured that, you know, the atmosphere is absolutely at ease and the students felt comfortable to interact with him. Because I don't know how many top level scientists are, you know, that simple and, you know, get to freely mingle with the students. Wonderful. That was a very good opportunity that we got as students.
I guess that was one very unique facet of Kalam sir. He actually narrowed the distance between a very, very distinguished person like him. You know, he actually narrowed the distance between the president and the public.
Yes.
I remember reading an article where it is said that few have impacted the Indian presidency as much as this eminent scientist who blew in like a breath of fresh air into the Rashtrapati Bhavan. And, you know, he was so much against all this pomp and protocol because he really wanted to be one with the people that he did away with the formal suit, you know, evenings with the Bandgala, the evening suit that actually everyone who visits the presidential home for the reception is supposed to wear that. But he did away with that rule. And in fact, it is said that he was even reluctant to wear that suit on the day of his swearing-in as a president. And he threw open the portals of the Rashtrapati Bhavan to people from all walks of life. In fact, one year he invited all the sportsperson to attend the Republic Day reception. Another year it was various sarpanchas who were called to attend the January 26th occasion. Another day it was all the postmen. When you could see how he was all the time trying to break all the barriers and become one with people.
Bishu, he had, I think he would have, he is one of the presidents who would have met probably a few thousands or lakhs of children.
Absolutely.
In fact, I have also read about like however late it gets, he used to see and meet till the last, you know, the child who is waiting to meet him.
I think that is what happened even in Prashant Nilayam, as you also experienced.
Yes. In fact, he reached out to each one of us. Like, he made sure each one got the opportunity to tell the names, what we are doing, and he shook hands with us. And the best part was, like, you know, he was just asking, how are you, buddy? That's something sweet.
So, what are your memories, Deepak Anand?
I think, Vishu and Ganesh, I think my memories too are on the same lines, that he was a man of great love and humility, first of all. In fact, his sense of empathy for in any every circumstance that he was in was so contagious. For example, you know, when he first came to dining hall in Sai Shri Nivas guest house.
This was which year?
This was 2002.
So he came as the president,
as the president of the country, and he was, you know, with his entourage of a small entourage of the military secretary, and then, you know, health in charge or whatever. A small entourage was there.
And you were serving him.
And we were serving him in the Sai Shri Nivas guest house. In fact, I was made in charge along with Arun Kumar, who is now in Hyderabad. And, he first came in for lunch, that particular 22nd of November 2002, I remember. And the moment, you know, he came to dining hall, immediately he just retreated some steps and went back. And we were wondering why he did that. when he saw us barefooted in the dining hall, immediately he went out of the dining hall, removed his footwear and told all his staff members, please remove your footwear before we enter
here.
Oh
my God.
So we were first of all not wow. an introduction to him. And we were taken aback by his sense of empathy, humility and concern for, you know, the environment.
He wanted
that he
to be in. The way the people who are serving him are.
Right, right, absolutely.
Wow.
And
he has not even interacted with you. He doesn't
not even interact.
He doesn't know
us.
Who you are.
He doesn't know who we are. He doesn't know that, you know, this is what is going to happen now. What is the protocol? But the moment he saw that we both were barefooted, serving in that
just
hall,
wearing white and white,
just wearing white and white clothes and barefooted, immediately retreated his steps and told all his staff members, while removing his own shoes, said, "Please remove your footwear and only then you can enter here." And wow. that was, we were taken aback by that. So as you in your introduction, I was listening to you, Bishu, it was very beautiful. That how this man always wanted to give maximum to society and received or accept very little from it. I think that is a man of a man of, we always say there in the Vedas, that tyagena ekam mritatvam manushu, that only by sacrifice alone can you reach immortality. And the way he left his mortal coils clearly showed he has no great attachment to anything in this world. That is why he, while doing his job of teaching the students, which he always wanted to be remembered as, he just left his mortal coils and merged, I think, back into Swami, whom he always considered as a mother. Maybe on some occasion, if we have the opportunity, I'll tell you that.
Sure.
But one more instance which really it comes uppermost in my mind is that particular evening when he had gone for Bhagwan's darshan, Swami had called him for an interview. So I checked up the bathroom and everything else, and I saw a very old, worn-out toothbrush lying there near the wash basin. And it was slightly darkened in color, and it was looking quite horrible, in fact. So I was wondering, you know, how can the president of the country have a toothbrush in such a dilapidated, worn-out state? So I immediately, you know, got a new toothbrush, Oral-B, super soft bristles, and I kept it there. I kept his original toothbrush to the corner of the of the bathroom. Feeling that probably, you know, he may have forgotten or whatever. And it is really, he's well deserving for a new toothbrush at least. And we come to Prashanthi. So I thought it was my duty to replace it. So he came back after the evening program was over and the convocation drama. And then the moment he finished dinner, he went to his bathroom and immediately came out and looked towards me and said, "Deepak, where is my toothbrush?" I said, "Sir, it's lying in the corner there, but I kept a new one for you." He says, "No, Deepak, for the last 12 years, that toothbrush is doing good service to me."
Oh my God.
"Please give it back." So I was just taken aback. One more example, which comes really to my mind, was the next 23rd of November morning, we had served him breakfast, and the breakfast arranged both from the South Indian canteen that we have and also from the Western canteen in the ashram. One of the items that we had told him about, what are the items available for breakfast and what he would prefer. And he said that he would prefer some porridge and some idli also. But to my horror, when I opened the casserole, the idli was not as soft as I would have expected for the president of the country. Having come to South India, and Andhra belt is known for his idlis and good quality idlis. But that particular day, I don't know what was the reason, idlis were not so soft. So I was feeling slightly embarrassed to, you know, serve those idlis to him. But I, of course, when he asked for it, I served one idli. So he had it. And he looked towards, you know, that both of us were standing there observing and, reminishing whatever he required in his plate. So maybe he guessed that probably we are feeling that idli may not have been so soft today. So he started.
He saw
lavishly.
There is some discomfort.
There is some discomfort on our faces.
Mm.
And the moment he had the idli, he started praising it beyond, you know, description. The best idli I've ever had. I love idlis very much. This is the way I used to have it in my house. It is such great. I'm feeling so much at home. Thank you very much. This is, you know, really the meal of the day. And, you know, he went on lavishly praising the idlis to a large extent because probably he felt that, you know, what our feelings could have been on that particular occasion. Mm-hmm. Look at the humility and the empathy of a man.
Sensitivity. Amazing. Right.
So this was amazing. I think it was the greatest opportunity of my life, you know, to be able to serve someone like him and learn the lessons that, you know, how deep the foundation should be, how much we should be grounded
yes.
to become a missile man of the country.
Deepak, in fact, that reminds me of a very nice incident that took place, like in the same year, since he was the convocation guest, during his convocation address, he had mentioned about telemedicine. yes. apart from many other areas that which is are of importance to the country and where the students should work on.
Yes, I remember
so,
that.
So that telemedicine happens to be the topic of my MBA project too. So in fact, when he mentioned that, I could get a lot of admiring, appreciative glances from the students. Because like till then, like there are a lot of people who are making, because it's a new topic, you know, a lot of people had their own doubts about what I could do in that. Like so when the chief guest of the convocation,
you had spent a lot of time in telemedicine, right?
Yeah, so
your MBA project, if I'm not wrong, was based on telemedicine.
In fact, we had invited Ganesh to our MBA institute, MBA this department, to give a lecture on this
on telemedicine.
It was very much appreciated.
Yes.
Thank you. So when Kalam sir mentioned about this, you know, there were a lot of appreciative glances and I felt very happy. And immediately after that, sometime there was an article in the newspaper where I came across like the students can write to the President of India and the email ID was given. This is something that I have never come across. So I said, let me try. So I wrote to him about my interest in telemedicine and some ideas, and prompt comes the reply. He was... It's a sweet, short, crisp email, but very encouraging. And he said, like, you know, he said how important telemedicine is for a country like India. And he encouraged me to pursue the topic. And he also said, like, I should get in touch with Professor Arun K. Tiwari and the CARE Foundation in Hyderabad, who are at the time working on telemedicine.
Beautiful.
So that shows, like... like though, you know, as a president, he has got lots of other tasks and a lot of other important things to look. But even a single mail from a student somewhere, like, you know, he had, he was ready to encourage him and reply him.
Ganesh, exactly the same thing happened when we were serving him also. 22nd night, we were serving him dinner and he was talking to both of us as to what we are doing. And we told him that we are doing our PhDs in International Financial Management. He was very happy to, you know, to listen to us, and he asked us about our topics of our research, and we told him about that. So immediately he called his ADC and asked him for a copy of the convocation address to be, which was given that particular day. And on that, on top of that, he wrote in his handwriting for both of us. And to me he wrote, my dear friend Deepak. He didn't address me as my dear Deepak, but he said, my dear friend Deepak, I wish you all the very best for your PhD and research. And your friend APJ Abdul Kalam. So he, I preserved that particular copy of the convocation address, and it was very encouraging. In fact, in the convocation address itself,
he mentioned, he mentioned your name,
you
right?
Were, you know, you're very happy, and
he mentioned the name of you and Arun.
Yeah, he mentioned our names and said these two PhD boys are serving me with so much of humility and love. And see, and all these, what Jaganesh brother said, what you are telling, what my experiences are, that what is a man's concern about others? He's not bothered at all about, you know, his comforts, his position, you know, his prestige or whatever the case may be. But he's a ground to...
All the time thinking how to make the other person feel important. Make the other person feel important, and it can be anyone.
It can be anyone.
It can be anyone.
In fact, after the after his dinner on 22nd evening, he said he would like to just go for a walk.
Yes, I heard about it.
You heard about it? Oh, no, it was this time, you know, we're talking with a lot of smiles about it. But that time he was so tensed about it. And you know, the also the PR of that time, our Mr. Rajan also was there along with us. So he said, I just want to go for a walk after my dinner. So he just walked up, and you know, 22nd November, can you imagine? On the west
Prashant is
side,
cold,
so
crowded.
So crowded, that particular lane, from, you know, which was after Saishinwas guest house, the west side. And he just walked into the devotees.
So all security people would have just lost it.
No, they realized a bit later and they were running behind him.
So they were chasing him. In fact, he would just go to a devotee and ask him, where are you from? And, you know, he'll get the reply and says, what is your experience with Bhagwan Baba?
Oh,
how did you become a devotee?
Oh,
what have you learned in his presence? Can you please share something with me? Some people were looking at him with great disbelief.
Yeah.
Who is this lookalike? APJ Abdul Kalam. So after that, he had spoken to a few devotees. You were all, you know, trying to chase up, catch up with him. And then he said, oh, okay, can I go to outside the ashram and have a look and go around Puttaparthi? Sir, please excuse us. You need to follow your security protocols. We can't take the responsibility of that. So we requested, pleaded with him. And then seeing our dilemma, he, you know, lovingly came back to the site of his guest house.
Just not make it inconvenient for you.
For us, exactly. we really heaved a sigh of relief, you know, once he came back to Sai Srinivas guest house. So such was a man.
Like, he really likes to mingle with people.
Absolutely. And I think that comes from his characteristic simplicity and innate spirituality.
Absolutely. And absolutely.
I think he was a deeply spiritual person. And thanks to his upbringing and his really beautiful parents and the town of Rameshwaram and all that. Mm. In fact, as Jagnesh, as you were mentioning about how he responded to your email, in fact, I remember reading a similar story, a very moving story, where he responded to a six-year-old. You know, there was this girl, B.H. Tanvi Rao, from Mangaluru, and she had once written a letter to Kalam sir, and she had sent a CD with a dance video of her performance. And these performances were choreographed by her.
Oh.
Even though she was a little one, she was very talented. She is very talented. And when Kalam sir received this packet, he had sent a reply saying, "Dear Tanvi, thank you for your letter with the CD of your dance performances. My best wishes to you. May God bless you. APJ Abdul Kalam." And a few months later, Tanvi was in Delhi to take part in a national level dance competition. So she wrote to Dr. Kalam with a request if she can meet him.
Oh, wow.
And so encouraged she was, right. You know. I mean, look at the president. You know, she could give this much, he could give this much courage to a six-year-old nondescript person from Mangaluru, a little girl. She had the courage that, yeah, maybe I can go and meet the president of the country. And so he writes, you know, he tries to contact the president, and she got a call from Rashtrapati Bhavan. When she tried to contact the president, she got a call from Rashtrapati Bhavan to inform that the president was actually busy with emergency meetings because there was a tsunami at that time.
Okay.
And so message came that he will not be able to meet her. But there was a promise from the president. He said, "I will meet you whenever I am next in Mangalore."
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And 5 years after this, in February 2009, Kalam sir visited Bangalore. On February 25th, 2009, Tanvi's father, Hariprasad Rao, he gets a call informing that Kalam would be meeting Tanvi at the circuit house at 9 p.m.
My goodness. Just imagine.
Imagine that. It was unbelievable, Tanvi writes, you know. At the circuit house, you know, he came towards her smiling, his eyes were shining. It was almost like, you know, she writes that it was like meeting an uncle of mine. And he listened to whatever the little girl had to say, and he saw her album and said, "Oh, it is your dance." And, you know, he was so happy to see her work and congratulated her. He blessed her. He placed his hands on her head and said, you know, "May God bless you." And he said he will definitely watch the CD. And this little girl, Tanvi, says, "All I can remember now is, though a great man, he kept a promise made to a little girl. And that really speaks volumes about him."
Bishop, that reminds me, I think his first book, that is Vision 2020, that is a vision for the new millennium. Even that book is dedicated to a little girl.
Oh, is it?
In the first book.
Amazing. And I think we saw this facet of him in different dimensions, you know, his concern for others. In fact, even when he became president, the first visit he wanted to make was to go to Gujarat, because that time there was Gujarat riots, and he wanted to visit the riot-affected areas. And the Prime Minister at that time, Atal Bihari Vajpayee, you know, he said, "Why you want to go to Gujarat now? You know, you've just become president and maybe this is not the right time for you to go now." But he said, "I consider it an important duty so that I can be of some use to people there to remove their pain. I want to bring about unity of minds."
Wow.
And at that time, the current Prime Minister, Shri Narendra Modi ji, actually accompanied him as Kalam sir went round the state. I think that this we have seen in different ways all through his personality.
Right.
Always caring for the other. In fact, I did another very beautiful story the other day. This is something that happened in a village in Punjab. It is called Sichewal village in Kapurthala district. And that village had a river. It was a very venerated river called Kaliben. And this river is known, well known, because on the banks of this river, Guru Nanak Ji was enlightened. And so people were making efforts to actually revive this river and clean up this river. You know, because this river had now actually reduced to a trickle. And when Kalam sir visited this river, he went once as a president and he again went later. When he visited on August 17, 2006, Kalam sir praised the volunteers who were trying to clean up the river and said that, you know, he asked the deputy chief minister about the Punjab government's contribution to the cause and all that. And he told them that zeal is very important than money, you know. These things you need enthusiasm to do. And he encouraged the villagers to be at it, you know, never give up hope and all that. But nothing really changed much. Again, Kalam sir visited on July 27, 2008. Now he was no longer the president. And now, again, he urged the local authorities to continue with the work. He asked the villagers to never lose hope. And he was keen that the project model of people's participation be successful. And this visit pushed officials to back the project, where thousands of volunteers are already cleaning up the river. And then Kalam sir went on to highlight the community's efforts to clean up the river at many of his lectures and speeches across India and also the international forums. And today there is a volunteer organization called Baba Sachwal, and the lead volunteer of this Sachwal village sarpanch, he says that the biggest support came from the people and President Kalam. He was instrumental in making the people, the intellectuals and official machinery aware of the project across the country and even internationally. And that is how today clean water flows on the banks of the river on which Sri Guru Nanak Ji attained enlightenment.
Beautiful.
He was born. I mean, that goes to show so many dimensions. You know, as someone said, everything for him was a mission. Even when he became president, that's what he told Vajpayee Ji. You know, for me, this is a mission. And every mission must have its goal. Every mission must have its passion, the determination to achieve that goal. And he will do anything to reach there. That was something phenomenal.
Phenomenal, yes. And also he was very well known as a team builder.
Absolutely.
Yes, I think that particular part is also an amazing part of his personality. And we also saw whenever, you know, wherever he went, his team people who were along with him, they were also motivated to, you know, to take the opportunity to serve him or serve the country by serving the president or, you know, doing any service which was required. Nothing was, you know, a menial job for anybody. It may be, you know, very high position in the thing, but when the opportunity came, everybody was ready to pitch in whatever was the requirement of that particular time. So I think as a team builder, as a leader, he was able to motivate everybody around him.
I think that is, Deepak, what he pointed out is actually such a phenomenal aspect of his personality. You know, whatever he achieved, it was because he was able to be that visionary. He was able to be that mission man.
Right.
Professor Venkatraman also, who also has worked with him, he said, this is what is so unique about him, that he was a mission man. He could take up any project, build a team, divide the project and ensure that the project reaches its culmination. In fact, there are very, very telling incidents if you read his life, the autobiography, Wings of Fire, which is written along with Mr. Arun Tiwari. And I remember one incident reading there. There is one occasion where there is a presentation being made to Dr. Vikram Sarabhai. This is about the SLV project, the Satellite Launch Vehicle project. You know, this happened between 1966 and 1971, and there were 22 scientists and engineers who had worked closely with Vikram Sarabhai sir for this. And Vikram Sarabhai, we all know, was a great scientist, and he was also a great leader, and he always wanted these review meetings, bi-monthly progress of the design. And during one such meeting, there were presentations on stages 1 to 4, you know, of the rocket design, the different stages. So the first three presentations went on smoothly, And his was the last presentation. He was handling the stage 4 part of the project at that time. So what Kalam sir did, he introduced 5 of his team members who had contributed in different ways to the design. And so each one of them went and made the presentation. And it went on very well. All the people who were responsible for the work, they made a presentation with authority and confidence, and it was discussed very well, and the conclusion was very satisfactory. Suddenly a senior scientist who was working closely with Professor Sarabhai, he turned to Dr. Kalam and said, "Well, the presentations for your project were made by your team members based on their work. What were you doing? What did you do for the project?" And it seemed that was one very rare occasion when Professor Sarabhai was really annoyed. He immediately got up and he told this colleague, "You ought to know what project management is all about. We just witnessed an excellent example. It was an outstanding demonstration of teamwork. I have always seen a project leader as an integrator of people."
Exactly. Beautiful.
And that is precisely what Kalam is. That is what Vikram Sarabhai, sir, told that scientist. And I think, according to Kalam, sir, you know, Professor Vikram Sarabhai is almost like a Mahatma Gandhi of Indian science, he says, because, you know, he was able to generate leadership qualities in his team and inspire people to go through it, you know, both as an idea as an example. You know, the project requirement, they had 275 engineers and scientists working for SLV-3. He wanted 273 engineers, but he had to make do with just 50 engineers. So imagine if you do not have those synergetic efforts, the project would have just been a non-starter. So he had to know how to delicately balance so many intelligent people. Where to draw the line, how to have a hands-on approach with whom, hands-off approach with whom, and so on. And in fact, there were some examples that I read in the book Wings of Fire, which just goes to show how inspired and charged up people who were working under him were. There's one occasion in 1979, the same SLV project. It was a 6-member team. They were preparing the flight version of a complex second stage control system. And there are a lot of technical details to it. There was a countdown mode. It was in a countdown mode, T15 minutes, so 15 minutes before the test. And one of the 12 valves did not respond, okay, during the checkout. So there was a lot of anxiety. And so everyone went to test site to see what is the problem. And suddenly, one oxidizer tank, which was filled with red fuming nitric acid, RFNA they say, red fuming nitric acid, that suddenly burst. And it caused severe acid burns to the team members. And it was a very traumatic experience. This was actually the final year, in 1979. That was the year they were actually able to launch this SLV. And this is happening in the last test phases. Very traumatic experience. And, you know, immediately Kalam sir and another scientist, Mr. Kurup, they rushed to the Trivandrum Medical College Hospital and they begged to have all their colleagues admitted there. There were 6 beds were not available in the hospital at that point in time. And with a lot of difficulty, they were able to put them in the hospital. Mr. Sivaram Krishnan Nair, he was one of the persons who was severely injured. The acid had burnt his body at a number of places. And by the time they went, got a bed in the hospital, he was actually in severe pain. So Dr. Kalam kept vigil at his bedside the whole night. And 3 o'clock in the morning, Mr. Sivaram Krishnan regained consciousness. And the moment he regained consciousness, the first words he spoke is, "I'm very sorry for the mishap, sir." And he assured Dr. Kalam that he would make up the slippage in schedules by working harder. "I know it's because of my mistake, because of my callousness, that because of whatever my shortcoming, that the project is now going to get delayed. I will ensure that I will work harder and ensure that we complete on time.
Wow, that brings out the leadership of Dr. Kalam.
What fantastic leadership. And Dr. Kalam says, men like Shivaram Krishnan, they are a breed apart. They are the strivers, always reaching higher than the last time. It is their sincerity and optimism, you know, even in the midst of such severe pain, which filled him with so much of courage. And he said, "No, this event greatly enhanced my confidence in my team." And he knew that his team would always stand like a rock, whether it is success or failure.
Excellent. I think we have seen this in the lives of all great people. In fact, the, you know, the epitome of that, we have seen also in the Bhagwan's life.
Absolutely.
How when we have Gram Seva, when he made us to make, you know, those primary schools, when we had these beautiful water projects, whenever the boys were involved, even in helping super hospitals inauguration, you know, before that, he will interact and empathize and encourage each stakeholder in his own way at his own level.
Wow.
And then he will, like the fulcrum, he will bring everything together and make the whole wheel to rotate in a more smooth fashion. We have seen that all the time. I think Abdul Kalam sir also was a great devotee of Swami.
Absolutely.
And there were many evidences, many experiences.
Yes.
Whereby, you know, we saw that how...
He had great love for Bhagwan.
Great love for Bhagwan. He was also a true devotee of God. And there are so many occasions probably which, you know...
Yeah, please go on.
The relationship between
Swami... Yeah, please go on, Deepak.
I think that is also a very important facet of his personality.
Yes, I mean, it was Bhagwan actually, I mean, all that goodness that, that we saw, it was a reflection of God's love.
Right.
And
right.
When he was obviously... face to face with God,
yes.
He knew he was face to face with God.
How much humble he was. For the first time when he came here,
yes.
We all saw that. You know, Swami had kept a special chair for him next to his, but he wanted to sit down on the floor,
yes.
Cross-legged position, and then, you know, sit there with folded hands. So we saw that humility of his, and Bhagwan also responded to him in the same fashion. Swami also used to, you know, hold his hand up and then ask him, come Kalam, sit along with me. And, you know, Swami would treat him like a small child. In fact, there's one particular instance, Vishu, which really epitomized that kind of, that made it very clear to me the relationship between APJ Abdul Kalam and Bhagwan himself. Swami had called us for an interview before the arrival of the chief guest. And he asked even G. Venkatraman, sir, what do you know about APJ Abdul Kalam? And he said, Swami, I only know whenever he's working and he's a little thirsty, he'll ask for nimbu pani, lemon water. And Swami said, okay, now that is all right. But he told me, I will get a special curry prepared in my own residence under my supervision.
This was in 2002.
And then I will have it served for lunch. I will have and you serve it for lunch. So when the lunch was served, we had cut the chapati and the, you know, the dal, everything else. And I got this casserole which had come straight from Swami's residence. And it contained a coconut beans curry prepared in South Indian style.
Oh, okay. Puriyal they call it probably.
Is it? Okay. So it was, when we opened the casserole, you know, beautiful fragrance was wafting in the air and, you know, I served it to him and I said, Mr. President, this is the curry, coconut beans curry, which Swami himself has got it prepared under his supervision and sent for you. When the curry was served, for some time he was still. So I was wondering why he is looking at it so intently and not having it. It is meant for having. So I then looked towards me and he was, of course, his face showed certain kind of, you know, emotions. On his, you know, that he was moved by that particular move. But I was not able to understand what moved him so much in a simple coconut beans curry. And maybe I thought probably, you know, Swami has made the effort of having it prepared and sent. That is why he's moved by Swami's love. And, you know, his words to me, I cannot ever forget. And he said, see, this is the same kind of curry that my mother would prepare for me.
Oh, wow.
None other than Bhagwan
could have, you know, known and done that. And, you know, he relished it so much. And he asked for it on three occasions to be reserved to him.
Oh.
He loved it very much because he was so touched by Swami's one simple move of serving him a curry, which, like the way his mother used to prepare for him. So it was just an, you know, amazing experience to see his love for Swami and Swami's love for him.
In fact, Professor Venkatraman also mentions how when people asked him to stand for the election for the presidentship, the first thing he did is come to Prashantanilayam. And he sought Bhagwan's blessings. We do not know what happened in the interview room. But what we definitely know is he came to Bhagwan first to seek his blessings. And the other interesting thing is, probably Deepak, you know this, right? That he offered his
first
2 months' salary.
Yes. How can I ever forget that? Yes. You know, it was a very memorable day. It was, I think, the month of October. He had joined as the president of the nation in 25th of July, I believe.
Yes.
And in the month of October, Swami one day was extremely happy. And we had just come out of the interview room, but Swami brought that particular fax letter and that check outside to the portico. And he asked us to read what was written there. And it was a letter which was faxed to him, and it had a beautiful, loving message of a child to his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And it was from APJ Abdul Kalam. And it read something like, most beloved Mother Sai, by your grace and blessings, I have today become the president of the nation. I am enclosing a check at your lotus feet containing my first 2 months' salary as a president of the country. Kindly accept and bless me.
Wow.
APJ Abdul Kalam. I mean, Swami was... It was not that, you know, it was because it was from. We have seen many, many occasions, even the, you know, the most downtrodden poor people, when they send even 10 rupees to Swami, Swami shows similar kind of love and affection because the feeling with which it has been sent.
Yes.
You know, the emotions that went behind that action, it probably touches Bhagwan much more than the action per se. So we saw that again, that relationship, you know, how he treated Swami as his mother, and Swami considered him as his very, very beloved, dear child.
In fact, Swami mentioned to Professor Venkatraman, he's a very good man.
A gold medal is also instituted in his name, right?
In the university.
Yes.
And I think just like Jaganesh, you recalled whatever you have seen of him. And I think, you know, the way Kalam sir is, I think every student who was there at that time must be having his or her own moment with him, because, you know, he would just go and talk to everyone.
Yes.
If you tap all the lecturers there, all the teachers at that time, somebody who showed him the presentation, somebody who shook hands with him, everybody must, you know, these are such people who are so pure that they really become channels of God's love.
Absolutely.
I tell you, Vishu, like, it's a very interesting thing. I happen to... in the WhatsApp profiles of those in my contact list itself, I could see at least 3 people who have their photos with him. That shows, like, you know, the kind of interactions people would have had with a scientist, a president.
And he was, as a scientist, he was so inquisitive about everything.
Yes.
In fact, you know, when we want to serve him dinner, he said, why don't you, instead of when we went to call him for dinner, he said, why don't you just bring in a few items right here itself? You know, why all that formality is required?
Not needed.
So he was, you know, the way we comfortably lie down on our dressing's bed, when just taking support in the back, keeping our heads behind our heads, and he was just very comfortably sitting there. In fact, he had also invited a small chat with the Andhra Pradesh Chief Minister, Chandrababu Naidu, sir. After he went, we served him dinner. And he was very uncomfortable, you know, that why you were standing at the edge of the door and why not be sitting along with him on the bed. So he asked us to both, you know, sit down on the bed only. So we sat down on his asking us. And then he started, while he was eating, he kept asking us, tell me more about yourself, tell me more about your research, tell me more about the institution, tell me more about Swami's water projects. I'm very interested to know more about Swami's work and, you know, the service missions that he's undertaking across the globe. So it was a very, very informal session, and he was requesting us again and again, why don't you take some dinner wrong with me? And I said, we would like to take it later after you finish. Let us do our duty first. So he was very, you know, just like a family member. Just like somebody said, no, he's like an uncle.
I think that, like, approachability was something very unique about him. And you could connect with him, anybody could connect with him at any time, just like we saw. And I think nobody felt inhibited trying to reach him.
Exactly. I'm sure, like, I don't know, I have a feeling like, you know, generations of Indians are going to actually pray or expect a president, a statesman, a scientist, a teacher, like Dr. Kalam. It's going to be our prayer. Like, you know, we should have somebody like him.
Yes, of that stature. Somebody who I would say, who knew missiles as well as, say, Mandukya Upanishad.
Yes.
Someone, you know, who could bridge the Quran and the Gita, who could bridge Rameshwaram with Haji Ali.
Absolutely.
And spread the fragrance of true Indian culture, true exactly. Indian secularism.
Across the globe.
Across the globe.
And in fact, I think like I happened to see a small clipping about his talk to the European Parliament, and it's exactly 2 minutes. I think he was given 1 minute to speak or something like that. He finishes on dot, and then at the end of it, you know, the chairperson comes and praises, and then he says, "It's a very rare to see a president, a scientist, a poet, all in one."
Yes.
I think as students, we have a lot of lessons. Even as devotees,
absolutely,
lots of lessons to learn from his life. But that humility was so contagious.
In fact, I think that was because I would think he was so clear right from his childhood about the purpose of his life.
Exactly. Be clear, rest will follow.
That goal setting was properly done, you know. Thanks to his upbringing and all his parents and the Indians in Rameshwaram again, that had such huge impact on him and his brother-in-law Jalaluddin and Samsuddin, his cousin. You know, he writes about all these people who, in the formative years, who really supported him and gave him that broad thinking. In fact, when he came for the convocation in 2006, I remember Kalam sir did mention about this, about the purpose of life. And he mentioned what he thought is the purpose of life. Can I play that clip for you? Okay, just a 1 minute clip where in the convocation address, he says, he asks all the students, what is the purpose of life?
Now I ask just now, what is the purpose of human life? The purpose of human life is beautifully described in Bhagavad Gita, in the battle scene where Arjuna was hesitating to fight against his own kith and kin in Kurukshetra. Lord Krishna showed Arjuna vision of Vrindavan, where the whole garden was blossoming with beautiful flowers and fragrance, the flowers attracting the honeybee when Arjuna was taken by Lord Krishna in the Vrindavan garden. It was an enchanting scene. In another vision of the garden, at the same evening, morning, he showed Arjuna beautiful flowers with fragrance, honeybee surrounding them. Arjuna sees the same garden in the evening. In another vision, the garden, all the flowers which blossomed in the morning had now fallen on the ground. Lord Krishna says to Arjuna, quote, "See the flower, how generously it distributes perfume and honey. It gives to all, gives freely its essence. When its work is done, it falls away quietly. Try to be like the flower, unassuming despite all its qualities." This is what Lord Krishna said. Lord Krishna conveys this message to the humanity, also for all of us.
So that is what Dr. Kalam mentioned, and he went on to actually give instances of our own students from Bhagwan's University who he felt were walking on that path of spreading fragrance. The purpose of life is, as someone very beautifully said, the goal of life is to know what is your gift, and the purpose of life
to give it away
is to give it away.
Beautiful.
And I think that is what his life is all about. His life was all about, isn't it?
Yes.
And I remember it is this man's humility that when someone asked him about the book, you know, he said, The biggest problem Indian youth faced, I felt, was a lack of clarity of vision, a lack of direction. It was then that I decided to write about the circumstances and people who made me what I am today. The idea was not merely to pay tribute to some individuals or highlight certain aspects of my life. What I wanted to say was that no one, however poor, underprivileged or small, need feel disheartened about life. Problems are a part of life. Suffering is the essence of success. And he said, God has not promised skies always blue, flowers strewn pathways all our life through. God has not promised sun without rain, joy without sorrow, peace without pain. And he goes on to say, I will not be presumptuous enough to say that my life can be a role model for anybody, but some poor child living in an obscure place, in an underprivileged social setting, may find a little solace in the way my destiny has been shaped. It could perhaps help some children liberate themselves from the bondage of their illusory backwardness and hopelessness. Irrespective of where they are right now, they should be aware that God is with them. And when He is with them, who can be against them?
Excellent.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
How encouraging.
Amazing. And we saw that that aspect of always trying to empower others, isn't it? I think a large part of our discussion was on that. And in fact, again, I remember reading another very beautiful article which said, rocket scientist who was also a healer at heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that article goes on to say how when someone questioned him about, you know, spending a lot of money on rockets and missiles, when a lot of the population of India is not fully fed, Kalam showed the caring side of the rocket science, you know, by facilitating the development of at least two products that revolutionized healthcare.
Yes, in fact, he was he wanted to use the spin-off from defense technology into medical care.
Yes, yes. Yeah, you're talking Kalam about Raju the stent, Kalam Raju stent.
The low, what do you call it, like?
Low-cost stent.
Lightweight calipers.
Lightweight calipers, yes. I think you had both, the stent and the caliper.
Yes.
In fact, when he met Dr. B. Somaraju, who is a Hyderabad-based cardiologist, and in 1985, Dr. Kalam was then the Defense Research and Development Laboratory Director, and he visited the Nizam's Institute of Medical Sciences to see a colleague. And at that time, Dr. Raju says how Kalam was very curious about everything, just like the Brother Deepakanand was saying, and you know, he wanted to know why stents. Stents are basically small tubes used to keep arteries from clogging. So Kalam sir wanted to know why stents were prohibitively costly. And that is when Dr. Raju said that, you know, it is costly because we are importing them. And that is when he heard that, he said, why don't we collaborate with the DRDO and produce our own indigenous stent? And that is another very powerful aspect of Dr. Kalam, right? He was so patriotic, so fired up that India should be among the League of Nations on the high table.
At the time, there was a lot of skepticism regarding like how they are going to produce a cardiac stent, because India was not even manufacturing orthopedic bolts.
Mm-hmm. But they went on. The DRDO provided the high grade steel used in missiles, and Dr. Raju's team designed the stent and they carried out the tests. And 5 years later, that dream did really reach its fruition, and that stent, which is now called Kalam Raju stent, it brought down the price of the stent from 75,000 to 10,000.
Look at that.
And Dr. Raju, he was very emotional when this actually happened. And he said for years, actually Dr. Kalam also was very, very emotional, because, you know, he had spent all his years in missiles. And here he was doing something which was actually more fulfilling for him, because here actually he was giving life.
Hmm.
And it was the same experience with calipers, which you were mentioning, Jaganesh. When they were working on these Agni and Prithvi missiles, Kalam found use for carbon-carbon composites to alleviate polio-affected people's pain. And that is what led to the development of calipers. And these calipers their weight was just 400 grams, and earlier you had the arms which the polio affected people had, which weighed nearly 4 kilograms. This was just 400 grams.
God.
I mean,
what a big difference to somebody's life.
Yeah, I think, and so he was also that way, you know, because he was always so tuned about what to do, how to use technology for social benefit. In fact, that is what...
No, it's not just about the research, but how it translates into something like a societal benefit.
Benefit. In fact, that is what he discussed also when he was in the labs, in the physics lab here. Dr. Shivshankar Sai, who was there at that time with him, he was mentioning how he was so particular to know about the social impact of the projects that we were doing. And our institute, fortunately, has always has had that slant, that orientation
all
the while. And I think perhaps that is the reason why, Jagannesh, you were so interested in your telemedicine project. Did
of
you
course.
Interact with him later also on this telemedicine project?
I think once more I could do that. That was in March 2012. There was a lot of news about a new tablet computer meant for primary healthcare workers in rural areas, being like, you know, Dr. Kalam sir and Dr. Arun Tiwari, they were working on it. So at the time, like, I had written to him mentioning about a similar effort what we did for our mobile hospital, because we tried to put together a kit and with ultra-mobile PC connected to that. So I wrote to him about that and then said, like, you know, how such a work that they were actually working on an indigenous tablet PC design, and especially meant for a healthcare scenario. So I wrote to them, I wrote to him, and though I didn't get a direct reply from him, but in the reply that I got from Professor Arun K. Tiwari, I could see that my mail being forwarded by Dr. Kalam to him for a response. So I still have that email with me. So that was my last interaction, I would say.
And I think that is something which we saw all through, right? Anybody who approached him was never disappointed.
Exactly. And that participation was there. Like,
participation.
He ensured that there was a response.
And I think these are the little things which make great men.
Of course.
Nobody is small for them. Nothing is insignificant for them. And in fact, if you see the book Wings of Fire, towards the end of the book, Professor Kalam says, actually Mr. Tiwari, who actually has co-written that book, he says, through Dr. Kalam, I was blessed with the revelation that the real joy of living can be found only in one way, in one's communion with an eternal source of hidden knowledge within oneself, which each individual is bidden to seek and find for himself or herself. This is what Mr. Tiwari, about whom you were mentioning, has written. In fact, how the Wings of Fire also came into being, in that book came into being, also is an interesting story. Maybe we'll end with that. Mr. Tiwari was working in the lab of Dr. Kalam since 1982, but Dr. Kalam had not really known him so well. What happened in the February of 1987 is, Professor Tiwari was in the hospital, in the intensive care unit, coronary care unit at the Nizam's Institute of Medical Sciences in Hyderabad that we were just talking about. And he was at that time just 32 years old, and he had this serious health condition, and he was actually fighting for his life. And Dr. Kalam went to see him, even though he didn't know him so well, but you know, that is what he was. He would go and be there beside anyone, you know, more so if it was a member of his team. In fact, if you heard Professor Venkatraman's talk in the morning also, he became very emotional at a point, because the time when Professor Venkatraman lost his only child, the person who took entire charge of the situation was Dr. Kalam.
Oh.
He came and he ensure that whatever needs to be done with respect to the rights, with respect to, you know, arranging everything, And because Professor Venkatram's wife was inconsolable and whole family was in disarray because his son was very young. He was, I think, 18 years old. So nobody was really in a state of, they were all in a state of utter shock. And it was Dr. Kalam who came and stood by Dr. Venkatraman.
It's like elder of a family.
Absolutely, like elder of a family.
It's what we, everybody actually who, you know, is interacted with him probably has felt the same way. Elder of the family. Was very caring and loving.
And so, when Mr. Tiwari was in the hospital, Dr. Kalam went to see him. And Dr. Kalam asked him, is there anything that he can do for him when he was in the hospital? And Professor Tiwari said, sir, please give me your blessings. Why I need your blessings is so that I may live a longer life and complete at least one of your projects.
Look at that. Even at his deathbed.
He wants to live so that he can work for Kalam. Work for Kalam's project. And Dr. Kalam says, you know, I was so moved by the young man's dedication. I prayed whole night for his recovery. And the Lord answered my prayers. And Tiwari was able to get back to work in a month. And Kalam sir says that Professor Tiwari then did an excellent job in helping to realize the Akash missile airframe from scratch within a short span of just 3 years.
He was instrumental in the titanium bottle which was used in these missiles.
Oh, wow. And then when Mr. Tiwari said, you know, he wants to write about Kalam sir's life, you know, he could not but agree. So, even though he had 18 hours of work, even during the busy schedule, you know, they would sit up late in the nights and early hours in the morning, and he would just narrate incidents from his life, and Professor Tiwari would just note them down and, you know, go over it and all that. So that is how the Wings of Fire happened. And it's really so amazing. And Dr. Kalam says all these rockets and missiles are his work, God's work, through a small person called Kalam, in order to tell the several million mass of India to never feel small or helpless. And he says, we are all born with a divine fire in us. Our efforts should be to give wings to this fire and fill the world with the glow of its goodness.
Very beautiful words.
Actually, we are blessed by Bhagavan's grace, like, to be associated with such a man.
And I think that is our fortune. When you are with Bhagavan, you will meet the best of people. You don't have to go anywhere. Everything, you choose the kingdom of God and everything else shall be added on to you. I think it's the same with Dr. Kalam's life also. He was very focused on choosing the kingdom of God right from the beginning. And God ensured that everything else got added on to him. And he accepted whatever he wanted. And whatever he received, he just gave it away. And today the whole world reveres him. The country has crowned him as the Bharat Ratna much before he became the president, right? And he's really become the Ratna of the heart of scores and thousands of students. And I think that is what is so moving. In fact, in that article that Narendra Modi ji has written about Kalam, that is what he says in the end. Even though he was, Kalam sir was a bachelor and he didn't have children, he said that is wrong. Because he was a father to every Indian child, teaching, cajoling, urging, exciting, clearing darkness wherever he found with the radiance of his vision and the passion of his involvement. And he said, the good that he did will not be interred with his bones, because his children will preserve his memory through their lives and work and gift it to their children.
Wow. Beautiful. Very well conveyed.
Amazing.
Really, I think Abdul Kalam was really a missile man. Was very well guided to the purpose of life.
Very well guided.
Very well guided to the purpose of life. But then, as our Prime Minister says, we are the ones who have to guard that legacy.
Absolutely.
So it is well guided, but the guarding part has to be is on us, is all of us.
Yes, and we have to follow those footsteps. Absolutely. Have to follow those footsteps. So thank you so much, brothers Jay Ganesh and Deepak Anand. I know there is so much more to this fantastic personality. Maybe we should speak to some more of our students, former students and lecturers and faculty members who were there when Dr. Kalam visited Prashant Nilam, and I am sure we'll get many more tales and such snippets which we should preserve for posterity, because there are not every day that you find someone who is so divinely blessed with wisdom and knowledge and who had the gift to radiate that love which God poured on him and which he cultivated and received so amazingly. Thank you so much, brothers, for joining
Outside Inside. Thank you, brother, for this opportunity. It's really a privilege.
Thank you, Bishu.
So, dear listeners, with that, we come to the end of this special episode of Outside Inside, Deep Inside. They say God can do tremendous things through the person who does not care about who gets the credit. Before God trusts you with success, you have to prove yourself humble enough to handle the big prize. And that is one of the biggest lessons that we learn from the life of Dr. Kalam. Bhagwan always says that humility is the hallmark of a person with education. It begins with that, and it should always be the signature of a person who has had any amount of knowledge, be it secular or spiritual. And there are so many such beautiful aspects of the life of Dr. Kalam, and by Bhagwan's grace, probably we will continue this session as we receive more dimensions of his personality, more experience of people who have seen him at close quarters and have anecdotes for us to document, share and be inspired by. Thank you so much for being to us all throughout the day, right from morning on this beautiful Thursday. If you have any queries or comments, as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studios now is 10 o'clock, and in a few minutes from now, you will listen to our regular program. There's a drama by Gujarat Bal Vikas Children, which was staged on 2nd November 2005. It's called The Way of Life. So you will listen to that in a few minutes from now. So keep listening. Keep sharing his love, and let our love, let our life become a song singing his melody. Let it become a flower that disseminates the fragrance of his love. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.